You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen Chatton from Gardnerville, Nevada. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 13th, 2026, episode 3861. Good morning, Horse World.
When your start time's on Saturday and your finish time's on Sunday, and it doesn't get much better than best conditioned, and completing the challenge is the challenge, you're an endurance rider.
That's right. It is the endurance episode here, back the second Tuesday of every month. And I wanted to remind everybody that if you search endurance rider on your podcast player, this is put out as a separate feed, separately from Horses in the Morning. And that's the easiest way to go back and find all the past episodes that Karen has done over the last 10 plus years. So if you want to go back and take a listen, you can do that as well. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. And I think it's like 13 years.
I said 10 plus because I can never remember.
I know. It's like, how did it get to be so long? It's crazy. It is.
Well, you're in the middle of winter out there, and actually all the endurance riders have come my direction. They're mostly in Ocala here, right near me.
They are. Yeah. I know.
And yes. Some of them live in my neighborhood because we are right beside the Gothi Forest, which is where most of them train in the winter. But there's like 50 miles of trails through the forest there. So they're training there and doing their thing. But tell us who's coming up on the show today.
Well, today we have a couple of really fun guests. We have April, who is putting on a new rider clinic in Ocala, Florida next weekend. And then we have another guest, Julie, who is from Montana, and she's going to be going to ride in the Gaucho Derby February.
That is a tough one.
So much adventure coming up. And so we're looking forward to talking with both of them, as well as Kristen from the Distance Depot.
You know, we've covered the Mongol Derby more than the Gaucho Derby, run by the same organization. And it's so much different than the Mongol Derby because, and I think it's tougher, actually. Just the way they run it, we'll find out about that. But I am looking forward to hearing from her and what kind of preparation she's doing to get ready for it. So that you have a note here, and I know you're very excited about this. You got a new 360 camera. I know a lot of the YouTubers are using those now.
Yeah, I did. And it's like, it is so cool. The technology has come so far because, you know, most of us will pull out our cell phones and take, you know, photos or videos when we're riding, but you don't really want to risk your cell phone. Yeah, it's so easy.
A lot of people have GoPros too, that they attach to their helmet or their vest or something.
Yeah. But like these cameras, you know, it's a kit. It comes in like a package. I got it from Costco and it was a really good deal. It was on sale and it comes with an invisible selfie stick. So when you're holding the camera, it's recording 360 degrees and the selfie stick itself is invisible. So you don't see that. So it's like really cool. It almost looks kind of in some ways like a drone or something, but it's so neat because you can get, you know, you can extend the stick out or hold it closer, whatever. But it's just so cool, all the stuff it can record, and it's improved enough with the technology that it's not bouncy. So you can be riding along at a trot or canter, and the video is nice and clean and smooth.
So it has a stabilizers built in. It works really well.
Yeah, it does. It works really good.
Which
and
one
the
did
editing
you get?
Is
Which
the Insta. It's the Insta 360, okay. And I think it's version 5, I think.
You need to figure out a way to mount it to the top of your horse's head on the bridle there somehow.
So, I know.
I know a lot of people put them on their helmets. They attach them to their helmets.
Right.
That seems, and, you know, that's the way that you see the eventers doing cross-country. That's the way they do it.
Uh-huh, and the GoPros. Yeah. No, I have done that in the past. I've got a couple of GoPros that are older, and, of course, they didn't have the stabilizers and stuff
back
then.
Now they're so good, too. They're really good now.
Yeah, they're really good, but I don't like that additional weight on my helmet. And then if you put it on the top, you know, you look like my favorite Martian. So, and if you're going through trees and stuff, you're likely to get caught. So the cool thing with the one with the invisible selfie stick, you can just kind of pull it out and you can still hold it in your hand and still hold a rein if you need to hold a rein. Like I was riding this last weekend on Jovi and he did like this major spook, of course, because I'm walking along and videoing and nice and relaxed. And then bloop, next thing you know, we're like my husband was walking the dog behind me. And he says, I turned my head. And when I turned back, you were gone. you weren't ahead of me on the trail anymore. I'm like, I know. I don't know. It's just one of those kind of things. But what was cool is I got it on the 360 degree camera. So I got like, you know, so I went through and I made a video of like three different angles of showing the spook that he did. And, you know, now, you know, of course I'm laughing at it because I stayed on,
right.
which was, exactly. I stayed on.
Reminds me, if you hadn't stayed on, tell me about the new helmet you got.
Oh yeah. It's a mountain bike helmet. It's a Smith, and it has a built-in crash sensor.
Now, is that legal to use? Does endurance require helmets?
No, okay. Only for juniors.
Okay. All right.
Juniors is required. So this pairs with the Bluetooth app, and you can have anybody that wants to follow you or track you, they can get the app. And when you go live, when you connect to your helmet, it's like, there's so much tech out there nowadays. You know, I've got my heart monitor. Now I've got the helmet. I've got the Garmin.
You should never get lost. Everybody's going to be able to find you easy.
Exactly. So if you do come off and have a hard fall, it will send automatic message. You can have it also contact 911. I don't have mine set to do that. I have it set to just for now, you know, contact a couple of people, and it will send a link with coordinates and to a map so they can see exactly where you are. And, you know, then presumably they'll try calling you. And if that doesn't work, then they're going to know something really is wrong. Like you fell off and, you know, hit your head and you're unconscious or something. So it's sort of cool, you know, and the price range is right in the same price range as any other helmet with the MIPS built in.
Does this have MIPS in it?
Yes, it does. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know they rate them differently than they do horse helmets, and that's why a lot of times they're not
right.
Approved. You have to have a horse helmet if your helmets are required.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and mountain bikers, I tell you, they go faster, jump farther,
yes,
and do more than I. I am a very conservative rider, so if I come off, it's most likely because my horse just ducked his shoulder and spun around, and I kind of came off sideways. So I feel safe, you know, wearing
a
mountain bike helmet.
That fall down the side of the mountain is the same for mountain bikers and horse riders, though.
Pretty much. Yes. We have an extreme mountain bike course back where I ride, and those guys are nuts.
They are nuts.
I mean, I just hope they all have helicopter insurance.
They are nuts. I've done a little of that. I have not done it to the extent that they do. They're just crazy. They have a death wish. They really do.
Oh my gosh, they are. You watch some of the videos I've seen where they're doing the jumps and coming down the mountain as fast as, if I ride a mountain bike down a mountain, that's rocky and single track with drop offs, I'm going slower than I would be on a horse.
All right, let's talk a little bit before we get to your endurance tip about the Arabian Horse Association. What's going on over there?
Okay, so they just announced recently their 2025 Distance Horse of the Year, which went to Espresso and Suzanne Ford Huff. And Espresso is a 16-year-old gelding. They had an incredible ride season last year. Earning titles in the West Region Featherweight Mileage Championship and a third place at the Tevis. Hmm.
They did do well.
They did. Yeah. Chief was the, going back, he was 2005 Distance Horse of the Year.
Well, 20 years ago. Wow.
That's 20 years ago. I know. So go Nevada Riders, because Suzanne lives here in Gardnerville where I do.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, congratulations, mm-hmm. Suzanne. All right, let's do your endurance tip. And what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about how to keep your saddle packs or any other pack or jacket from bouncing on your saddle.
Okay.
So a lot of the packs that you get, they come with nylon straps, which are fine. You can attach it to your saddle, the pommel or the cantle, either way on your saddle. But usually that's not enough, especially once you add water bottles. So what I have found that I do, and I've been doing for, many, many years, is I buy bungee by the yard, or you can buy it, it might come in 3 foot or 6 foot or whatever lengths at your fabric store or online. And, or you can get elastic shoelaces. They're just about the perfect size also. And they're usually like 1/8 to 1/4 inch. And so I tie them in a loop. And then I loop them through my D-rings or the pommel on my saddle. And now I can put my saddle pack or whatever pack or my jacket through. And you can, twist it and pull it around again for a second time to make it more snug if you need to. And that will secure and cinch down everything nice and snug. And then it's not going to bounce.
Okay. That is a big problem, because there's nothing more annoying than having it bounce around either.
Oh my gosh, especially if it's bouncing and it might be, bumping on your knee or it's bouncing on the back of your horse on his loins, and it can be really annoying. And I mean, this stuff it doesn't cost very much. If you have a fabric store where they sell it by the yard, you're looking at like a couple of dollars, $2 or $3 to buy enough to do this. Or if you buy it in an already pre-made package, it still should be under $10. And it's a great solution to solve all of your bouncing problems that you might have.
So what do you use? Let's go over what you have on your saddle. What packs do you use? We haven't talked about this for a long time. So what do you have on there when you're doing a 50 or 100?
Well, because I have a Pandora saddle, which is carbon fiber, the back I have two mounted bicycle water bottle holders.
Oh, you just screwed it right into the saddle?
And they're screwed right into the saddle, so there's no bounce there, which is wonderful. And then on the front, I have a pommel pack, and there I can put more water bottles if I want, or I can do my snacks, a first aid kit, chapstick, some toilet paper, anything else I think I might need for the day. And then around the pommel in addition to the pack, I've got my elastic bands, the bungee stuff that is there that I can slip my jacket through if, you know, so when I start in the morning and it's freezing and cold, I start with a jacket, but, you know, in a couple hours it warms up so I can pull off my jacket and stick that on and nice and secure. And that works out good. I also have a hoof pick on a clip that I can clip on to a D-ring on my saddle, because it's always handy to have that where you can just get to it real easy.
And so the only thing you have on the back of the saddle is the water bottles.
Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll ride with a rump rug and that'll be, you know, tied onto the back of the saddle. And then that gets rolled up also when it gets warmer.
So I was wondering where you put your coat and stuff. So you just stuff that in the front. You just elastic it on, basically.
Right. Yeah. Yes, underneath the bungee.
Yep. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yep.
And you've done enough miles. You probably got this down to a science. And now tell me, when something's not in the right place or you forgot something, it probably bothers you the whole time, doesn't it?
Oh, I think anybody, you know, once you see, that's the thing. If you have too many packs, like I used to have, you know, a pommel pack, a cantle pack, a boot bag. Once you get so much stuff, then you can't find anything. So I've kind of switched over to the more simpler method of less is more. So then if you do need something, you know where it is exactly and can find it right away.
It's quickly. True for long distance hikers too. They always start out with a 40-pound pack, and by the time they're done, they're down to 15 pounds because everything has been gotten rid of.
Exactly. You get down to exactly just the stuff you need and nothing else.
But when you start out in this, especially when you're new, you think you need everything, right?
That's
just the way your brain works.
I know. Like, I just now recently got a new heart rate monitor.
You have more electronics than most people when they're riding.
Oh my gosh. You know, between the Garmin and the heart rate monitor and now the helmet. Oh my gosh. It's
You're
like
just a walking signal.
It's kind of hilarious. It takes me longer to get all the electronic stuff hooked up on my horse than it does to tack them up.
At night, she has 12 things plugged in around the house.
That's true, because I also have, I think we've talked about this on another show, I have a tracker for the horse.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So like, right, because I'm going to a ride this coming weekend, his tracker's plugged in, my helmet is plugged in, I'll have my Garmin watch plugged in.
It's, you know, and because we are here where the endurance riders are in the winter, there's always at least one loose endurance horse in Gothie Forest every year. I think we've talked about them almost every year. They get loose. You know, they're always loose because the place is so big. You know, they get loose in there. There's so many trails, it's hard to find them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that happens almost every year. There's a loose horse and then the alerts go out and we have to keep an eye out and hope we get them before the bears do. But bears tend to not fuss with horses. They're too big. They don't want to deal with a horse.
Oh, good. Good.
All right, we're going to go to Kristen over at the Distance Depot. What are we talking about with her today?
I believe we're going to be talking about ankle boots.
All right, sounds good.
Well, good morning, Kristen from the Distance Depot. Thanks for joining us again this month. And tell us what our topic is today.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. We will be talking about leg protection. So we have a whole page dedicated to leg protection on the website under For the Horse. And we have, you know, poultice and liniments and ice boots and fly boots, all kinds of things for leg protection, including your interference or your fetlock boots, as well as splint boots. And we feature brands like Back on Track, which are therapeutic mesh. And then we also have Toclat, deluxe interference boots with double Velcros. We have cheaper varieties like Saxon and some the Wolf brand from Toclat. Also, they have a nice fetlock boot and a pro fetlock boot, as well as a splint boot. And of course, Professional Choice. Professional Choice are really nice because they're kind of a one size fits all with a Velcro compatible material. I will say, though, if you ride through a lot of prickers and brimbles, those will get stuck to that material. So that might not be a good choice if that's where you ride or you think you might run into that stuff. I love those, but they did get the little burrs on them you'd have to pick off, which was a little pesky.
Yes, I camped last year on one ride where there were foxtails, and I literally threw those socks away that I was wearing because there was just no way. So I understand. I know.
Yeah, but all kinds of good stuff there on that page. Standing wraps, quilted wraps. Like I said, our ice boots that we manufacture here in-house, and those are called Easy Ice Boots. So lots of good things on that page.
Okay. And so where would people find these things?
They can visit us at www.thedistancedepot.com and look for that page called Leg Protection under For the Horse.
And I do want to just add, because I did a recent order, that the Distance Depot is so fast. If you order custom tack, like with the biothane that they make, they are so fast. You order it and you can get it in the same week. It's wonderful. Yeah. They are terrific.
Yeah. Occasionally we have someone that calls and says, hey, I wonder if this, you know, can we add this to our order? And we say, oh, we already shipped it. a lot of times that happens to us, but we do try to get it out just as quickly as possible.
You do. And you do a great job. So thank you for that, Kristen.
You bet.
Our next guest this morning is April Lauren from Ocala, Florida, and we're going to be talking about an upcoming new rider clinic that is being held next weekend in Ocala. So welcome, April. Thanks Hello. For joining us this morning. Hi.
So good to be here. We love you guys down here in Florida. So thank you for having me on and helping spread the word about this.
Right. Yes, we love to spread the word about endurance riding and getting new people involved in the sport. So what inspired you and the Southeast Distance Riders Association to create this? It's a beginner-friendly introduction to competitive distance riding. What inspired you to start this and to do Absolutely. This new clinic?
Yeah, so we have an awesome president down here in the Southeast. Her name is Chris Littlefield, and she and Carol Thompson, who many of you all may see at some of our rides here, were really wondering what is a good way to get more people aware of what distance riding is. Now, as we all know, endurance, if we get into, you know, the definition of it, is the 50 mile and above. Well, it's not usually normal for someone to come in and do a 50 mile ride right out the gate. And to be honest, so many horses are not even fit for a 10 mile loop. So we said, how can we really make this engaging and accessible? And that's exactly where the idea of the clinic was born. So it'll be just a quick, you know, 5 mile loop, and the clinic about, you know, kind of what you can expect in a day of distance riding as a whole.
Okay. So who is this event mainly designed for?
Yeah. So this is perfect for riders who are just like endurance curious. So trail riders, fox hunters, dressage riders, eventers, or just really anyone who loves conditioning or spending time outside with their horses. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with just doing ring work, but we all know as distance riders that there's this new level of bond that we reach with our horses when we become dependent on each other out there. And some people don't even know that bond is missing until they get out on a trail with their horse. So we think this would be perfect for those people that have had a taste of being out on trail and then maybe want to explore how to go further in this.
Okay, so can anybody attend with or without a horse?
Yes. Well, we have the ridden part. So it does include a 5-mile loop that is ridden. But yes, we are welcoming people who want to just come and check out what the 3-day 100 is going to be. I think Heather Reynolds is going to be riding the 3-day 100, which is going to be held concurrently. So the clinic will be happening in one area, but the 3-day 100 CTR is still going to be happening. So this is going to be a really cool opportunity for people who want to come to also see what is happening through those that are at the kind of higher level of competition as well.
Okay. Can you walk us through the day's schedule and what the participants can expect?
Yep, absolutely. So they're going to get in right around 9:30 or 9 o'clock a.m. I'll be there probably a heck of a lot earlier than that. We'll get you parked, and all the riders are organized into groups. So we'll have parking for, let's say, group A. They'll all be together. Then their mentor is going to take them over to the vet in, and they'll have a chance to vet in with Doug Shearer. And the mentor's job is really get everybody into the vet check safely, explain here is your ride card. This is what we're going to be looking at throughout the day. This is the heart rate that we're looking for. Doug Shearer will then vet if there are any imbalances or lameness issues. He'll address those at the start and then go out and do a 5-mile loop, come back, vet right back in. Same thing, heart rate, hydration, soundness, overall condition. And then go to trailer and, you know, let your horse rest. We'll also provide some lunch and a little lunch and learn on what is distance riding. What are these different distances that are involved, these different levels of competition, and how to best be set up for success as a rider and for your horse.
And you'll go over trail markings and how to follow a marked trail.
Yes, we've already started to have some humor if you go into the event itself about like, all right, guys, this is where the event is. So as we get closer to the event itself, I think we're going to use, which we're all familiar with, like orange markers when you pull in with your trailer and you're going to go, you know, follow this with your trailer. And then once out on trail, you're going to be following orange markers on your right-hand side. And we'll also discuss what turn markers look like, you know, what turn ribbons might look like as well. So, yeah.
Hey, perfect. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And are you going to, and the weather's shaping up nice.
Yes.
Because it's Florida.
It is Florida. Exactly. So we don't have any snow in the forecast.
Oh, good. Or freezing cold.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction. But, you know, as Glenn knows, it could change at any moment.
Hey, we're supposed to get in the 20s one night this week. I mean, we're going to all die.
And as it's, yeah, I know. And it was like 82 days ago. So I just, it's crazy. The crazy stuff. But yeah. And, you know, I think what will also not, I think what will be discussed, which is so much beyond like, okay, these are your markers and this is how to arrive. But it's really talking about how to get your horse in shape for their first ride. 10 miles, which so many intro rides do start at, is still an excessive, I say excessive, for a first ride out on trail. And many, what I'm noticing about the people that are signing up now, these are very new, right? Like they maybe have gone on a walk trail ride, but they're ring horses and 10 miles would be a lot for them. So 5 miles feels like, okay, this is what we've done, but hey, heads up, when you go home, you should probably get on track to start incorporating these 5-mile rides into your regiment if you wanted to go and do an intro or an LD or things like that.
Exactly. Right. And so how many people are you expecting, and are you going to have mentors to guide them?
Yes. So let's see, I'm looking at my list. So what's interesting, and we hope that everybody takes our heed on getting registered, is we have currently 10 people signed up that have submitted their forms for the entry, but on the event itself, it looks like we have another, let's see, yeah, we've got 10 people going and about 78 interested. So we'd really love everybody to get their registrations in. You know, it's a very cost effective. I think we're charging like $40 if you're not a CEDRA member, but if you are a CEDRA member, then it's only $15. And we want everyone to fill out the questionnaire because it's how we assign them to the right mentor group. And so we have some amazing mentors, people who have completed Tevis and people who are riding instructors. It's myself, Madeline O'Connor, Maya Dossett, Elaine Lemieux. So we have some really great mentors as well that are going to be, you know, helping these people along throughout the day.
Right, exactly. So that just sounds like it's going to be a really fun event, and hopefully you can be an inspiration for other ride regions so we can start doing more kind of new clinics like this and getting people interested in the sport.
Absolutely. And it comes with humor, right? Like, we are going to be attractive to these people if we realize, like, we actually do have the most fun. And I say this after growing up and showing Arabian horses and showing sport horse under saddle and main ring and all this stuff. I promise endurance, we have like the absolute most fun. It is the most cost-effective equestrian sport out there, period. And on top of everything, we have amazing people here. So if we just go out into our local communities and say, listen, 5 mile clinic. And if you join, you know, you get a discount or whatever it might be. We have mentors. Take phone calls before the ride. I've taken a couple phone calls from people who want to attend and they're, my horse is never tied to a trailer. And we just talk to them and say, that's okay. Guess what? Mine was the same way. You can lead them around while we're in camp. We'll put a buddy next to you. Just be as welcoming and just a true extension of what endurance riding is as much as possible.
And I think people think too, you have to have an Arab to be at the lower levels of endurance riding. Yeah. And that is not true at all. You can have a gated horse, whatever, you know, it doesn't
matter. You can have a mule.
Yeah. Quarter horse, whatever.
You know, so. Yeah. And we have a nice combination. So of the 10 horses that have signed up, we've got 3 Arabs. We've got a thoroughbred Frisian cross. We have a Chickateague pony coming.
Oh, cool.
We've got a paint. There's a Tennessee walking horse coming. So we got a nice blend of everything.
You know, it's funny because, Karen, this is one of the very few places you can trail ride here in Ocala. And I know that April's going to agree with me with this, that You see Pasifinos on the trails, and it is so funny to watch. It is just, sorry, they're just funny
yes,
to watch.
Yes, it is. Yes. You know, it's interesting you say that, Glenn. My neighbor, as I'm watching him right now, he does Pasos, and I'm watching him out their school on a sounding board. So
there you go.
But, yes,
but when you see him, you know where you ride there through the greenway.
Yep.
You see him from a distance, and it's just so funny to watch because their little legs are going, and they're getting nowhere.
Yes. And sometimes the horses are looking at him too. I mean, I'm watching my whole string of horses watch this Paso go around, and they're like, what is he doing?
Yeah. So, why is he doing it that way?
Yeah, right. But, you know, it's the same with the Tennessee walking horses. They see that big lofty gate sometimes, and they're like, what is that? So
my wife has a Kentucky Mountain saddle horse that she wants to endurance ride with.
Wow.
He's getting there. Next year, she'll probably be at this clinic. But he has those, it's not a silly gait, it's just strange. And I haven't seen one. It's kind of a cross between a Paso and a Tennessee Walker and others you've seen. And I don't know that there's an official name for it, but boy, is it smooth. I mean, it's smooth and fast, but it's just, I have not seen this before. So.
Yeah. And we see everything out there in the greenway. We see the quarter horses, the Paso.
Well, we used
ponies.
To bring our carriages out there too. You know,
yes.
We used to ride our carriages out there all the time.
I think we have Maris. She's down here, and I've done the same thing. We pulled up to all go for a morning ride, and she starts pulling a buggy out, and I'm like, okay, that's what we're doing.
Karen, that's
today.
A whole new thing when you drive a carriage or a cart, when you get into the forest with trail riders, because the riders themselves see the cart and they freak out. They're petrified. Their horses could care less, but because the rider gets freaked out, the horses get freaked out, and the best thing we've learned is the carriage just stands still and let the horses go by.
And Maris will hand out carrots. So the way that we handle it with the horses is she'll like just give all the other horses carrots from the back of the buggy or her cart, and they're like, oh, that's just the food mobile by the end of it.
I used to ride out with the cart and the ponies with large groups of trail riders, and what happens is after the horse gets used to the cart, they tend to want to tuck in right behind it. So horses' tendency is, oh, the cart's bigger than me, you know, let them get eaten first. And they tuck in behind. So when I'm driving, I'm usually in the lead, and I have all this breath right down my neck from the horses right there.
Goodness. It would be cool to see more, you know, competitive driving. But hey, that's another cool thing about the trails at the Greenway. So as you know, Glenn, we have different levels, which is also so cool about the trail systems we have here. We have green.
There actually are some small hills, Karen. There really are.
Yeah, we actually have hills. We have hills.
Not like yours.
100 feet.
There's three of them. And you're like, whee, that was fun.
Yeah. And they probably are about 100 feet. You're about right there, Karen.
Okay.
but no, there's Red Trail, which is very almost mountainous, lots of climbing and very narrow passages. You have Yellow Trail, which is typically pretty good to go, just kind of like your good starter trail, get you out there. You've got, I think it's green or blue, that is the wider wagon trail that's great for the driving horses. So, and they all just kind of run parallel to each other, so you can find areas to cross over if you wanted to do a different level of complexity on the trail.
So, Karen, that's the Florida Greenway. That was supposed to be a canal they were going to build in the early 1900s. Uh-huh. And they started building it. They just never finished it. So they had bought all this land that goes from the Atlantic to the Gulf. And it goes right through Ocala. And what they did basically is make a linear park out of it when they gave up on making it an actual canal. So they had dug the trenches and everything. And that's why there's actual hills, because they had dug down a good bit. And now there's trails all the way through. You can literally ride from the Atlantic to the Gulf across the state. It's kind of cool. It is cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty neat.
Well, this has been fun, April. Good luck with this. I think we need to do this,
Thank
as Karen
you.
Said, all around the country. Because it is intimidating. Getting into endurance is intimidating. There are certain things, and we've been talking about it here for 13 years, but, you know, but they are a receptive group, and you get a mentor when you first start, and that helps you out. But there are things
Absolutely.
To learn, and I love the way that you're doing this is actually on a ride.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah, and we've got our mentors backed up. And I will also add, if there are more AERC or just distance riding people in Florida, please reach out, because we have people coming from Jacksonville, Palatka, like throughout Central Florida and even South Florida. So they're going to come here and ride, but it would be really nice to send them home to someone who's kind of in their area and in their proximity that's able to, you know, keep it going with them.
Where do people find you? Where can they go?
Yep. So go to the event itself. And then, you know, I'm on Facebook. It's April Lauren. That's the easiest way to get in touch with me for the distance riding stuff. You can always shoot me an email. It's April. I won't even try. Well, it's april.borovskaya@gmail.com. But that's why I say you're way better off just finding me on Facebook or going to the event, and we can connect that way.
Sounds good.
Or looking at CEDRA, Southeastern CEDRA. Distance Riding Association.
Even better than that, we're just going to put links in the show notes. So just scroll on your podcast player, click
absolutely.
The link.
Absolutely.
Right. Good luck, April. I hope you get 50 people there.
Well, thank you. It would be very surprising, and Carol Thompson would definitely give me a look morning of, but I'd be welcome to she would look at me like, oh, we are doing this. Yes, we are. We're ready to rock and roll. And if anybody local wants to come in and hang out or help out, we'd be happy to have them.
Thanks, April. Well, we're going to change gears entirely. We're leaving Florida and we're going to go much further south where it's actually summertime right now. And we're talking to Julie Biddick. You're from Montana?
That's right. Ennis, Montana.
You're an endurance rider, right?
Correct.
Okay. You have a few thousand miles under your belt. And then you got this crazy idea that you're going to sign up for one of the hardest rides in the world. And that is the Gaucho Derby in Patagonia. Why? Why? What prompted you to do this?
Yeah, right. You know, so growing up, I actually grew up here in Montana and my family had an outfitting business. So I grew up spending multiple days backcountry and taking pack horses and doing that kind of lifestyle. Endurance is actually kind of new to me. Only in the last 5 years have I gotten involved in endurance competitively. So what's really cool about this Gaucho Derby is it's not really just a horse race. It's also an adventure race. It's definitely a survival test that it's putting you through. So basically, it's combining all the things that I love into one extreme package. And it's definitely going to be pushing me far, far outside of my comfort zone, which, you know, it's good to be pushed outside of our comfort zone every once in a while. So it's just really a unique experience. And how special to experience it. It's kind of a vanishing way of life, right? The Gauchos and how they, you know, what they do and how they approach life and the experience of that. And then just the beauty of the Patagonia. So it's wrapping all of these really critical experiences into one thing. You really can't get it anywhere else. So yeah, once I learned about it and I read about it and had a few friends do it over the years, I'm like, okay, I've got to do this. I got to put myself through the test.
And Patagonia is at the very bottom of Argentina, kind of its own world. Yes. It should really be its own country because it kind of is its own world down there. Now, mm-hmm. This race differs from the Mongol Derby. You're at 310 miles, but I mean, we're talking rugged wilderness. It's not the big open plains like you see at the Mongol Derby, but they do it a little bit differently too. To explain how it's done.
Yeah, so I know one of the main differences with this is we do have to take all of our gear with us.
That's going to be big difference.
Yeah, it is a big difference. Yeah, so they allow us 22 pounds, and that includes our saddle bag as well, along with everything that we need. You know, I mentioned it's a survival test, so your gear, your tent, your sleeping bag, your food, the jet boil, so you can prepare your food, your first aid kits.
You know, things like 10 that. 10 days worth of food. Do you have to carry all 10 wow. days in 22 pounds?
No. So okay. They do every 2 to 3 days, we will have a resupply. I'm waiting. Okay. I think I'll find out here in just a couple days exactly our resupply days. But we're going to have 2 or 3 resupply days throughout the 10 days. And they give us roughly 3 pounds per resupply. So it'll mostly in that resupply just be a resupply of the food to add back in as we continue on.
Gotcha. And now so does it work like the Mongol Derby where you're switching horses all the time, or do you have the same horse?
No. So we still switch. We don't switch as often through the 10 days. I know we get 7 different horses, so we don't go as fast. And a big piece of that is because of just how technical this terrain is. It doesn't really lend itself to moving as fast as the Mongol Derby. And then, you know, the extreme mountain climbing up and down and the technicality of that as well. So we don't go quite as far with each horse and we don't go as fast with each horse.
And these horses are a little different than the Mongol horses too. The Mongol horses mm-hmm. tend to be, you know, large size ponies. These are actual horses, yes. right?
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
They're kind of their own breed too, aren't they, down there?
Yeah, my understanding is they've mixed that breed quite a bit over the years. So the Creole, which I'm really excited. I hope I get to draw a couple of those, which are my understanding is based out of Argentina. But then I think they have a lot of other breeds that have mixed in over the years. So you might get some that are a little more drafty. You might get some with some of that Arab side in it. So they could be smaller. So we'll definitely get a mixture of breeds for us to, we pull a number out of the hat, you know, when it's time for us to get a new horse, and it's kind of luck of the draw what we get.
You know, one of the nice things about your own food, though, is you won't get the Mongol runs like a lot of them get when they're doing that. And you won't have to drink fermented mare's milk. There's that. Probably you won't have to do that.
That's quite an experience.
So how are you preparing? What are you doing to get ready? You live in Montana, so that helps.
It does help. Yeah, actually, I'm very fortunate with where I live. You know, I think, you know, physically, again, you know, part of the training of what I would have to be ready for is already a part of my life and a part of kind of the passions I have. So like hiking and spending multiple days backcountry, competing in endurance. So I just really ramped up my intensity and kind of the purpose of how I attacked that in this past year. And then I also added in some additional training, which I should be doing anyways. I'm just not doing it as consistently. So this past year, I've kind of adopted that in my lifestyle. And that's doing yoga and some balance board work, lots of stretching. I've even added in some running, which, you know, I did a little bit of that with endurance, but that is not something I like as much. So I've done a bit more of that.
Let's face it. That's why we ride horses, is so we don't have to run.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then mentally, you know, I guess really getting to a spot where being comfortable with being uncomfortable, I think that's important. You know, you're not going to go out and test these elements and do a survival type race and be comfortable the whole time. You're probably going to be uncomfortable most of the time, and you just got to be good with that. And getting really comfortable with my gear. So once I've really dialed in what I want for my gear, testing it in the elements. Again, I live in Montana, so I've been able to take it out in extreme winds and extreme temperature changes and know how, you know, and out in rain and snow. So I think all of that's really, really important.
Tell us about your gear. What are you bringing?
Yeah, so, you know, as far as gear, I think, again, 22 pounds, that has to fit either on me or the horse or kind of a combination of both. So I really focused on the weight of the gear, how compactable it can be, and then the performance. You know, so I think quality, we're not allowed, there's no room to take backups. So making sure that whatever gear I did select,
making sure that quality is there.
No, nope, the saddle's not included. Yeah.
What saddle will you use for this?
So they actually provide a saddle. Okay. It's made there in Argentina by Arondu, if I'm saying the name right. I think it's Arondu. And I actually got an opportunity to ride in it a little bit. A few months ago, I went over to Stevie Delahunt's and she does a Gaucho Derby boot camp, is what she calls it, for a few days. So it actually was fantastic because I got a chance to sit in that saddle and ride in that saddle and see how saddlebags can work and attach the saddle. So it was really invaluable.
Is that kind of Western looking?
Yeah, I feel like it looks maybe closer to the Australian Outback type saddle. And one big difference that I learned after sitting in it is they ride with their feet very forward. So you're riding a lot closer to, I guess, your point, to a Western, where your feet, the stirrups go very far forward and it really sits you back kind of on your seat pocket. So someone like me that has a good hunter jumper background, and I even ride in my endurance a little more forward, it's a little bit different style. So it was nice to see that and be like, okay, like this, I need to go back to my Western days back when I was even younger. So,
Karen, we just watched a YouTuber that's motorcycled through Patagonia and did some of the horse stuff while she was there. And they tend to ride slunched over too. Their back's rounded and their feet are way out front. It's a completely different way of riding. Karen, you would cringe if you saw that. This is not equitation perfect, let me tell you. But then again, you're spending 10, 12 hours in the saddle. So it's a whole different ball game that way. Have you packed your monkey butt powder? Is that going to be in the saddle?
Desitin is. So Desitin is my go-to. It just performs well for me. And so, yeah, absolutely. I've made sure that is in my ride.
Yeah, I bet. And your mountain house meals, I assume it's going to be a whole bunch of dehydrated meals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I actually picked Heather's Choice for that. Just kind of looking at, there's so many different varieties.
It didn't used to
there,
be. It used to be Mountain House, and that was it. But
right? Yeah, that's right.
Are you excited, nervous, both?
Probably both. I mean, you have to have a little bit of that jittery feeling, and that's what makes it, you know, that's why I'm loving this. It's almost like Christmas for as a kid, right? I can't wait to get down there and start this. And so, yeah, I think all the emotions in one. I don't know what you call that, but they're all there.
I know that the equestrians are very good about safety as well. And so I assume you guys are going to be all tracked and have your satellite trackers and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they actually provide us there with a Garmin GPS, and also the DeLorme, the little mini inReach DeLorme. Okay. So they provide us with a couple of trackers, and that's part of in their race rules, is that during the day when we're moving, we have to have that on all the time. And actually, because of that, people can watch us as well. I mean, they have a spot where people can go online on the website and see how the race is progressing through the days.
And do you, one other question here, do you follow the same track, or is it kind of like the Mongol Derby, mm-hmm. where here's where you got to go for your next checkpoint to get there?
Yeah, no, exactly like that. They change it. Every race is different, so they don't use the same track. And then, yeah, they give you the waypoints. You put that in your GPS, and then it's up to us as the rider to determine how we want to get there. You know, what is the best route? Is it going up and over the mountain? Is it going around the mountain? You know, and they also will have the topo maps to help guide us on those decisions on what makes maybe the most sense just based on looking at the map. And I have my Southern Hemisphere compass that I bought that will help kind of keep me on course, you know, once I've decided what might be the best route to get to those different GPS waypoints, which are your vet checks. They have multiple vet checks throughout this whole event. And then I think ultimately just reading the terrain. I mean, that's just invaluable, right? You got to see what's in front of you and make those decisions sometimes on the fly.
So it's not like the Mongol Derby, though, where everybody checks in at night and most of them stay in the yurts. You're on your own for that? You're camping or doing whatever?
Yeah, we are. So we still need to say, okay, we're in for the night. This is where we're camping. We have just like the Mongol Derby, here's your start time and here's your stop time. There are definitely penalties if you go outside of that start and stop time, but you do need to be communicating, you know, here's where we're stopping for the night. This is where we're going to pitch our tent. And I think a part of that too is strategically, you know, when you're camping out with the horses is there a good water source there? Is there good food for the horses there? You know, so it might mean I stop my day 15 minutes early because this is a really great spot and I'm not sure of what's going to be in front of me, or maybe I have to get a time penalty and I push past that spot and go another mile until I find something that I think is more suitable for the horse. You know, so those are all kind of strategic things that you have to figure out as you're going through this.
Are they ground tied at night? How do they do it?
They hobble them. And there are ties. So, you know, assuming where you stop might have a place you could tie up, that could be an option. But you do have hobbles with you, and they should be all trained for the hobbles. So,
yeah, I mean, these horses, when you see the terror, and a lot of them run loose, too. They're running loose mm-hmm. until they gather them up. And, you know, it's a completely different way of life down there. I'm excited for you. This will be fun and exciting. And one other question. Have you practiced not showering for 10 days?
Well, fortunately, I've done some stuff backcountry that's okay. Lasted multiple days. So, yeah, I've been stinky before.
Okay, good.
I can handle that part.
Because that's the part I don't think I could handle. So, Julie, good luck. We're going to follow you. We'll watch your dot, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
And we'll have you on after to tell us all about it. All right.
Oh, I would love that. Absolutely. Yeah,
we'll definitely do that. Thanks, Julie. Good luck.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good Bye. Luck. In order to find where rides are in your region, go to aerc.org. And you can also look up the calendar for other endurance clinics coming up. We have the AERC annual convention that's coming up February 28th and March 1st. And that is going to be a virtual convention this year. We have several outstanding speakers covering all sorts of different topics, ulcers, saddle fit, all sorts of topics. So check it out at aerc.org.
Very good. And of course, you can find links to today's guest in the show notes. Just scroll right there on your podcast player. Search for Endurance Rider also on your podcast player if you want to subscribe to this episode separately from Horses in the Morning. We'll have a full week of shows for you the rest of this week. Actually, Wednesday and Friday, Ashley and Jamie will be together. I'm heading off to the PodFest conference to speak over there in Orlando. And then on Thursday, it's the Equine Affair episode as well. Karen is here the second Tuesday of every month, and so you can look for us again in February. Thank you, Karen. Where can people find you?
NZ Endurance Rider.
NZ Endurance Rider. All right, NV. Everybody. Or NV. Sorry, yes, that's right. NV Endurance Rider, Nevada.
For Nevada. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.